and welcome to another Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Warm enough for you?
It's boiling.
It's fucking hot, isn't it?
It's way too hot.
I've been moaning about it. We've had, this is about day three of a heat wave. I've been moaning about it to everyone I've spoken to. And a lot of people don't like me moaning about the heat because they're very welcoming of the sunshine and the hot weather. But for me, I find if it gets above, I think I've got a cutoff point of about, let's say, 23 degrees.
Okay, I agree with that, yeah.
Anything higher than 23, I start to become very tetchy. Very tetchy. And you know me, that's not like me at all to be tetchy in any way, shape or form. I'm a very calm man.
Yeah.
But when it's a little bit hot, it doesn't take much to get me going. I'm looking after my parents' garden. They're on holiday at the moment, so I'm going and watering it and making right. sure that the plants survive the heat wave. I got cross with the hose pipe this morning. I was literally having an argument with the hose pipe in the garden.
Right. Because, what was going wrong?
Oh, well, it stopped. The hose pipe just stopped.
And that's a worry.
Well, what had happened was the hose had got caught up and it had wrapped itself around, and so it caused just, you know, a little kink in the hose that was stopping the flow of water. But I wasn't really in the mood for any kind of
you weren't feeling kinky.
No, I just wasn't in the mood for anything impeding my progression of getting the garden done, because it meant being out in the sun for a short period of time, let's say maximum 15 minutes, but that's too long. I think I start to cook at about, I reckon, 3 minutes in the hot sun of anything above 23 degrees. I genuinely believe I start to cook.
Wow.
And so my tetchiness levels go through the roof. It means I can't sleep, of course, in this heat. I barely slept last night, which makes me even more tetchy. So I'm a bubbling, bursting boil of seething, overheated pus at the moment that could explode.
Oh, that's a lovely image.
Any moment. And it probably wouldn't take much to reach that point.
Well, I have other issues to contend with, because not only do I have to sort of get on with the heat as much as everyone else does, but I have Mrs. Ben, who I'm just sitting there waiting. It happens every year. We hit a certain temperature and she starts asking me, can we get air conditioning? Can we get a paddling pool? And
a paddling pool?
For the 4 days of the year this happens, it would be lovely, but it's not worth the expenditure to install aircon in a house in England. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah. No, I understand that, but I'm slightly concerned that you're not even prepared to go as far as she's not even asking for like a swimming pool. She just wants a paddling pool. You're like, no, not giving you a paddling pool, love. You've got me. That's enough. You're not winging. How much is a paddling pool going to cost you? A little kiddie's paddling pool. I reckon you get one for a tenner.
We have a bathtub.
Yeah, that's sit it, in love. That. Yeah, love. Go in the bathroom. You can't enjoy any of the outside air, which is really what you're craving, but you just want to paddle your feet. But no,
she can open the window.
Bath, love. Go and open the window in the bathroom. I mean, honestly, I've never heard such, it's almost marital abuse, I would say.
Well, if you'd like to donate, you know, we've never pestered our listeners for donations or Patreon subscriptions.
Oh, right,
but if you want to buy Mrs. Ben a paddling pool, then feel free, hit us up on Twitter and donate.
Can I just also say, and I don't want to bring your personal life too much into the podcast, that's your personal life, Ben. I
won't go ahead.
But just yesterday was your wedding anniversary, and I know you don't mark it. I know you don't really, but surely for a little wedding anniversary present, you could have surprised her with a paddling pool.
I could have. But where's it going to go? You've been in my house. Where's it going
to
go?
What do you mean? They fold up small when you're not. It's not like you. It doesn't have to be up all the time.
Well,
you've got like a little shed area you could keep it in and then bring it out in the summer. I don't think you're being fair to Mrs. Ben on this at all. I say our very loyal but small audience, we'll launch a campaign. How many tweets would it take for you to buy Mrs. Ben a paddling pool? I'm going to look up how much a paddling pool is now. Right.
I'm going to say,
what's your cutoff point in terms of money spent on your dear wife? What sort of money you know, how much would you be prepared to spend out on a little gift for your wife? Considering you don't buy her anything for Valentine's Day, wedding anniversary, rarely birthday or Christmas.
That isn't true. I spoil her on her birthday. Okay. You bastard.
All right. You buy her something on your birthday, on her birthday, but the rest of the year, nothing. How much would you pay for a paddling pool?
Well, it isn't the cost of the paddling pool. I would pay £25 for a paddling pool.
Well, I found one for £18, a 7 foot rectangular. I mean, 7 foot bed. It's almost coffin sized.
if we get five tweets. That's all. I'm not asking for 5,000 likes. I'm not asking for any of that shit. Just 5 tweets, I'll get her a paddling pool.
I found one for just $12.99. Nice orange one. Just sit with its feet dangling in that. I found also, one for a tenner.
That's annoying. If I'm going to buy something...
$3.99, you could get her an Intex Baby My First Pool. $3.99.
If you're going to buy something just to put your feet in it, that's going to annoy me, because use it properly or don't use it at all. And if you want to just put your feet in something, then we've got a basin in the sink, which you could fill with cold water and sit indoors if you want to. Put a towel down. We'll put that on the floor. You can stick your feet in there.
Again, you're forcing her... What are you saying? That put her feet in the basin in the bathroom?
No. Take, you know, the bowl you put in the sink in the kitchen.
Oh, you're washing
up. The basin. The washing up basin. Fill that with cold water. Stick your feet in that. It's the same. Yeah. Having a paddling pool just to put feet into is obnoxious.
Okay. So the problem is more, it's not the fact that she wants a paddling pool. It's the fact that she wants something to put her feet in and nothing more. If she was asking for a full-on hot tub, or a cool tub in this case, that would be more acceptable to you. Something with which she could immerse her whole body, that would be better for you. Something, you know, you could drown her in if needed.
If necessary.
That's what you're after. There's a lovely one with a little unicorn's head on you can get.
We do have a hot tub place down the road.
I remember driving past that when I've been to a house, a little hot tub place.
I think it's called Hydro Spa or something like that. But they're astronomically expensive. And I did want one for a while for nothing other than because they're big fancy bits of kit and I like that sort of thing.
So you want a hot tub but she can't have a paddling pool. This is a very unfair relationship going on here.
Once I realised it wouldn't fit through the doors, I had to cancel that dream. But I want my hot tub but she can't have a paddling pool.
Right. Let me ask you this. Let's say you've gone against the grain. You've gone against every fibre of your being and you've bought a paddling pool.
Okay.
And it's 29 degrees. It's baking hot. You've been out. You've been on your job all day. You've been on your feet all day. And you come home and there it is. You resent this thing, but there it is. Are you telling me you wouldn't stick your feet in that and you wouldn't find a moment of joy and comfort?
No, I'd resent the price. I'd resent the price for something I could do.
Resented the price. I've found you one for $3.99. But less than a pint.
Considering we can already do what she wants to do, she can sit in the bath. It's fine.
It's not. Okay, you've got a dog.
Yeah,
the dog would love this. The dog.
That
would love
dog just won't die. I
love
the bones.
This dog? It's about 107, God knows. Isn't it?
Old as the dinosaurs. She's going to outlive us all.
She's got great.
Oh, she just. I don't know if you heard that on the microphone or not. She just joined in. She started barking outside.
She's got great biology going on there. Like her anatomy must be almost super because she's not exactly the fittest dog, is she? But she's holding on in there.
Yeah, I mean, in the old days where basically the radio station we worked at fell apart and we had to broadcast from my house.
Yeah,
where she was old then.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
that was a couple of years ago.
I've known you nearly 10 years. She was old when I first knew you. I'm sure then you said, I've got two dogs. They're both on their last legs. And one has sadly gone to the great kennel in the sky. But this one, man, it's got some superpowers, this dog. I reckon when this dog finally goes, as you say, if it doesn't outlive us all, there'll be tests carried out on this dog. There'll be one of those things where newspapers will come round. Because what's the average age of a dog? It's normally what's bad. At a push, we're talking 16, maybe 18.
Well, she must be approaching that. She must be almost 14, 15.
She's a very old lady now, let's put it that way.
She is. She's got a little grey beard on her as well.
Is she?
Yeah.
Well, that's lovely. But she would enjoy a paddling pool. Imagine in this heat being a dog who's got all that fur on.
So you're suggesting after a long, hard day's work...
Yeah, yeah.
After sweating my bollocks off, marching around East Grinstead with everyone's bloody... post.
How dare people come get home. Post? How dare people receive
I
mail?
Should come home,
yeah.
And my treat for the day should be sharing my wife's foot and dog water.
Yeah, it's only your feet.
That's my going. Treat, is it?
It's only your feet going in. I don't know what the problem is. I mean, unless the dog's pissing in it, which at her age she probably would. I mean, just the sight of water's going to make her go. But, you know, but it's... Or get your own. They're so cheap. Have your own one, if that's a problem.
Well, hang on a minute. Why am I now paying for this? A moment ago, we were crowdfunding from our massive audience.
We never crowdfunding. I just wanted people to tweet to humiliate you into buying Mrs. Ben a paddling pool because you're so stingy.
All right. Five tweets, she gets a paddling pool.
Five tweets, right. So,
that's not from the same account before any smart ass does that. Five different accounts that aren't fake and aren't clones. Five individual real accounts tweet, say, get Mrs. Ben a paddling pool. She'll have one by the end of the week.
I reckon we can do this. So, at Trev and Ben, right? Just at Trev and Ben, put paddling pool. Or throw abuse at Ben if you want, but just paddling pool will do. And we're all five. I mean, it's not much to ask for. I mean, we might have to get... people to ask their friends and family to get to those sort of numbers, but I reckon we can do it. So at Trev and Ben on Twitter.
It's tragic, isn't it? I thought, what's ambitiously high so I'll never have to buy this paddling pool? And I landed on five.
Yeah, I mean, it is high as far as we're concerned. There's a big old number, and I mean I'll be really disappointed if we don't get five, but
I wouldn't hold your breath.
You know, you said you walk around sweating your bollocks off.
Yes,
I've got something that you can get for that now. This is a brilliant idea. Saw this advertised this week.
Well, this is an amazing segue.
Freezable boxers.
Wow.
They're called snowballs.
That's a good name.
And what they have is like little gel kind of wedges that you put in the freezer. You know, like when you know those things you can get for like injuries, like ice packs.
Yes.
You know, it's the kind of like those, but they fit into a little sort of pocket at the front of your boxer shorts, and they will keep the temperature down. I'd imagine, I don't know how long they would last. I mean, in this sort of weather, you're probably going to have cool balls for a couple of hours, I'd imagine, with those.
Can I raise some serious health concerns over these?
Well, I knew you might, but yeah, go on. Yeah.
Well, and I don't want to get too gynecological with the podcast, but the testicles do need to be outside of the body, housed at a certain temperature in order for the sperm to live.
Yeah.
So that you can produce, you know, the Yeah. So, why am I getting so shy about this? So, this needs to happen. So, anything which is going to refrigerate your balls sounds like it might be detrimental to your sex life, your fertility, and also, let's not, you know, dance around the fact that the penis and cold conditions don't really go very well together.
Right, okay. Well, I want to start at a very basic point. I've listened to everything you've said. And
you have.
We would address many matters, but there's a very basic point I want to start with. You called it a gynecological matter.
Yes.
I mean, that's a... I mean, gynecological is for the female area.
I'm aware of that.
So, you know, already we're showing a massive amount of ignorance.
Do you? Right. Okay.
I mean, are you regularly going to a gynecologist if you've got an issue? You turn up and they're like, he's here again. Just humour him. Are you putting your feet in the stirrups? I mean,
out of the paddling pool into the stirrups.
Yeah. I mean,
that's my autobiography.
It's a great album title.
Listen, you can laugh at me and call me ignorant if you know what the male equivalent of gynecology is.
Balls doctor.
Balls doctor. Fuck yeah. Off.
No, you'd probably, you'd have to go to a urologist, wouldn't you, I would imagine, for the male sort of area.
You're making that up. You don't know that's the right term, do you?
There's definitely a urologist, but that might cover both male and female. That's about the...
So you don't know the word?
Well, but I wouldn't use gynecologist either.
But you know what I meant.
Right, well, let's move on and address some other issues.
Let's go.
Right. So you're worried about the health benefits of this. Well, of course, the testicles need to be really kept at a low temperature normally. So these boxers are not just there to cool them down. They're actually used for medical purposes to help people who are looking to conceive. So it keeps everything at a good, decent temperature there and works well. So medically, they are proven. Now, yes, you could say that there might be an issue with cold affecting, you know, the size of something. But
yes,
when you're hot and bothered, do you care about that when it's all tucked in, when it's all, you know, you're not showing, I mean, unless you're walking around generally swinging it about, would it really matter?
Well, no one wants to walk around with a shrunken, you know, unit, do they?
To be honest, in these temperatures, I wouldn't care less. It can shrink so small that I can go to a gynecologist and they wouldn't notice. Ben, when I came across those boxer shorts, it yes. got me thinking about other kinds of useful inventions that we might be able to get our hands on.
Okay, what we got?
Well, here's a few that I've come across that I think could be quite interesting. Some of these might be slightly outdated because they're old inventions that never really took off, but I think there's a place for them. So in 1896, a guy called James C. Boyle, he was struggling with a dilemma, right? So this is back in 1896 when, let's face it, people were more polite. There was more courtesy around. Don't you agree?
Well, I wasn't there, but I assume so, yes.
Yeah, you know, gentlemen would lift their hats, wouldn't they, to women on the street. They'd doff their cap. It would be a very respectful environment, nothing like we have now where it's just a free-for-all.
Do you think it's really worth, you know, acknowledging a lady's entrance to a building so much that you just stand up and take your hat off? I mean, it seems a bit old-fashioned to me.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in general, I think it was a more polite society back then.
Okay.
But he had an issue in that he wanted to be polite, but he was so lazy he couldn't be bothered to lift his arms. So he invented what he called the saluting device.
I've got my head in my hands for obvious reasons.
So it was a small wound up mechanical device and it would sit between your hat and your head. And then when you wanted to salute someone with your hat, all you had to do was bow your head and then there'd be a system of weights that would shift in the mechanism and activate it. And the device would then tilt and rotate the hat for a well-mannered, how do you do? Never took off this device.
No shit. The thing that surprises me about this is that is epic laziness.
Yeah.
That you can't be bothered when you feel it's appropriate, you feel it's so necessary that you have to invent something to take your hat off. You can't be bothered to make that 2 second inconvenience to yourself. However, you are willing to go to the effort of inventing something to solve this problem.
I suppose it depends on how often. Think back to 1896. I'd imagine you were, you know, having to tilt your hat a lot to women every time one passed you on the street, or whatever. So there's probably a lot of it going on. So it was probably worth putting in the time and effort to create a device that would do that for you. Because let's say if you were walking to the shop and you're not driving, there'll be no transport apart from horse and cart, right? So you're walking, it's perhaps a 20-minute stroll, and you might pass, let's say, 100-150 ladies. And if you're having to tilt your hat at every time, surely a device would make sense to do that for you.
No. If I lived in a society where it was commonplace and considered normal behavior and polite to doff my cap every time I passed a woman, and I might pass 50 women walking down the street, do you know what I'd do?
What?
Rather than invent something, do you know what I'd do?
Take your hat off and just keep
not
it
wear
off.
A fucking hat.
I mean, you've gone straight for a just opt out, haven't you? You just opted out of the politeness. Just go, I just won't do it. I won't wear it. Would you still bow your head in reverence, in respect to passing?
That's not the issue. That's not the issue here. The issue is this guy was so lazy that he couldn't be bothered to do the whole hat doffing thing, which I think is ridiculous anyway. So he's invented something, a sort of automatic hat doffer, rather than just not wear a hat.
But in those days, a hat was a thing. Everyone wore a hat, didn't they?
Did it mean something to wear a hat?
No, but there was a time everyone wore hats, didn't they? Up to probably about the 19... I would say hats really started going out in about 19... in the 20s and 30s, that's when hats... Before that, you look at any picture of any sort of gathering of a crowd of people, everyone had a hat on of some description, whether it be a cloth cap, flat cap, or a bowler, or a top hat. There'd be hats all over the place. The women would have their little hats on, little fascinators, if it was a posh day out. There was always some sort of headgear going on. That was just the thing, wasn't it? And to not wear a hat, you'd probably be seen as, like, you know, a bit of a weirdo. So, oh, here he comes. Oh, look at him. No hat.
But yeah, you're a weirdo without the hat. But the bloke with the automatic hat tipper, that, yeah, he's normal as anything, yeah.
Well, as I say, it didn't take off. All right, then. So what about this? Neither you or I are really up for growing facial hair. It doesn't really happen that well for us.
I'm barely growing it on my head at the moment, let alone out my face.
So in 1876, again, you're going back in a time where facial hair was perhaps more prominent. There was always a moustache, wasn't there? Again, you look at these hats and facial hair. They were the era, weren't they? So someone came up with a moustache guard.
A moustache guard.
So what it would do is you'd put... it was sort of a curved shield made out of vulcanized rubber, maybe metal. And...
Sorry, what's this for? In case someone comes and rips the moustache off you?
No, it's so that when you're eating and drinking, you're not getting any food or drink into the facial hair. Because there's nothing worse than that. If you're with someone who's got facial hair and they've tucked into some food and or they've had a drink and there's still a bit of like lager head bubbling away on the tash, or there's like a bit of sauce that's dribbled down the beard and it's just sort of dribbling there. That's enough to put you off the rest of your meal or drink, isn't it?
I have mentioned this before on this podcast. I think I did it as a recommendation a long, long time ago. A YouTube channel I enjoy watching called Beard Meets Food.
Oh, yes. I remember you telling me about this. I mean, it sounds horrific.
And he's a really funny guy. He's lovely. He can eat an incredible amount of food. You have to see it to believe it. But some of the things he does are challenges and they're timed and he's in a bit of a rush. And he has an epic, epic beard, hence the name Beard Meets Food.
Yeah.
And so I've seen him do ice cream challenges and bless him, the state of him by the end of it. It's dripping down the beard. It looks disgusting.
It's like a baby.
Worse than
like
giving a beard.
Like giving a baby ice cream, but they haven't got a beard. I mean, I think if you're going to do eating challenges, I've seen a lot of, I mean, I have a bit of a thing about messy food anyway. I don't like anything that you really have to, like, I'm not talking about a sandwich, but I don't like chicken drumsticks. I don't like anything that you're having at a meal time where you have to pick it up and eat it. I don't like that because it gets messy if you've got like wings or something. Oh, I mean, wings. I don't see the point of a wing. It's more bone than meat. Why are we bothered? It's like ribs. Why do people have ribs? There's fuck all on them. It's more hassle than it's worth.
Come on. You need to come round. I'll make you some ribs.
Honestly, mate, I've had ribs and you just think, what was the point of that? The work involved in getting the remnants of the meat off of that. You might as well just give me the bit of bone and I would have just put it on a plate. It would have just been part passed along without me doing anything with it. The idea of having like a lobster, I mean, as much as people go, oh, lobster, that's the work involved. So if you've got a massive beard, don't go on telly or film yourself eating food quickly or messily.
Because he's doing very well. Millions of subscribers. He's doing a much better job of success in internet life than we are. So
I bet he wouldn't have to worry about getting five tweets. But what he needs, a moustache guard. That's what he needs. So this is the perfect invention. Unfortunately, it didn't seem to, again, take off. I suppose perhaps the moustache was going out of fashion. But I reckon if you've got facial hair, I mean, it's only a moustache guard. I reckon you need a beard, a whole beard thing going on. Almost like a hair net that goes over the beard when you're eating, if you're going to do that sort of thing, just so that you don't have to, I mean, you know, are you saving a bit for later? I mean, what's going on?
But I mean, unless you're in a competition, how badly are you missing the inside of your mouth that you need a moustache guard to block drippage?
No, but I mean, let's say it's a drink, though. I mean, I don't like to drink just plain milk, but let's say you're drinking milk, you know, you get that
I have to go to the pub for a pint of milk, yeah.
No, but I mean, any drink, you get, you might be left with a bit of a drink moustache, whatever that drink might be, right? I mean, I remember there's a picture of me somewhere. I'm sure a friend's got a picture of me. There was a time when I would have... I can't remember what it was called now, but it was like cider and blackcurrant. It had a name. Okay. Was it snake bite? Was that a snake bite?
That sounds right, yeah. Yeah.
And I went through a stage of having a lot of those. But what you don't realise when you're drinking those is that you end up with a blackcurrant moustache as the night goes on. And nobody tells you. And then you suddenly go to the bathroom or somebody's taking a photograph and you see it and you've got this sort of purpley, looks like you've got a rash. It's not pleasant. But, yeah, you know, if you've got a tash, if you've actually got a moustache, all of that is going into the hair and it's all going to be there, still fermenting away. So, yeah, have a little guard for it.
Well, no, absolutely not. You can either be that weird dickhead who's walking around the pub with some strange moustache guard on his face all night, or you can be the bloke who dabs at his moustache with a napkin,
right,
and solves the same problem without the weird attachment all night.
All right. Well, let me move on to another invention.
These are just winding me up. They're so redundant. Like, it annoys me that anyone ever thought these were good ideas and ever went to put them into practice and fund them. And no one tweets us about paddling pools.
Well, let's move on to another invention, right? These are chicken eye protectors.
Is that a problem?
Well, if you've got chickens, it might be.
Why? What's wrong? Why are their eyes in danger? Well,
from each other. Because if they get a little bit pecky at each other, their eyes are in danger. And there was a guy called Andrew Jackson Jr. in 1903. He invented chicken eye protectors, little goggles that you could put on your chickens to protect them from other fowls who might attempt to peck at them. So little tiny eyeglasses, essentially, for chickens, little goggles that would pop on. Now,
I must admit, I don't have as much of a problem with that one, because one, it's animal protection. It's right, keeping them safe and healthy.
Yeah.
And number two, I think the idea of a chicken wearing a little pair of goggles would be really cute.
Like a little chicken biggles.
Yes.
Chickles.
That's exactly what I was imagining. The sort of... What is that flying helmet thing I'm thinking of?
Yeah, he's
driving a little biplane.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, so you're happy with that? Moustache guard, no. Automatic hat doffer, not.
No.
Chicken eye protectors, you're all in for?
Perfect.
All right. Leaf gathering trousers.
I can't even begin to guess what that might be. What? How does that work?
Well, they're trousers that you wear, right?
And I understood that bit, mate. I'm not that stupid. Right?
So, and they have two sort of flexible nets stretched between the leg bits. So
the leg bits.
Well, down sort of by your calf area, that's sort of the lower leg. You have a sort of mesh that goes between the trousers.
Oh, my leg bit, yeah.
The trouser legs, right? Do you know what I mean? Right? So that when you sort of, you waddle along, But the mesh is like a net that gathers in the leaves as you walk through a pile of leaves. You don't have to rake them up anymore. You just waddle through and they gather in the net in the trousers. And then you can then just unhook the net and dispose of the leaves. Now, I'm one person, right? This would be brilliant for me because the one thing I hate about mowing my lawn isn't having to rake all the cut grass afterwards. I haven't got a lawnmower that collects the stuff as you go.
Okay.
So to have these would be brilliant. I cut the lawn and then after, instead of spending 20 minutes raking all the grass, waddle along the lawn backwards and forwards, picking up all the loose grass and leaves, and then pick that up, just shove it in the bag, job done. I reckon as a time saver, I'm all for the leaf gathering trousers.
No, I think for the amount of money that they cost to buy, surely you could afford the extra money to be spent on a lawnmower which has a bag on the back or a rake.
I've got a rake. It's not a rake that's the issue. It's the gathering that's the issue.
This is stupid people with problems that aren't problems. They're just things that happen in life. They're not a problem to anybody. And they're coming up with these ridiculous solutions when they already have solutions. It's really annoying me, this.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. A couple of dog ones here. We talked about your dog earlier.
Okay.
These are fairly recent as well. So in 1999... there was a patent put in to the US Patent Office for dog testicle implants.
Right.
It was basically like a testicular prosthetic device.
Prosthetic? Meaning zero functionality?
I think so. But I mean, if your dog had been neutered, then perhaps they'd be missing them. So you have implants to replace them so the dog doesn't feel...
So this is for the sort of person who has neutered their pet, but then worries they'll miss the feel of having the equipment.
If they went to the dog gynecologist, the dog would say, I haven't got my testicles. And they would suggest...
The dog would say, I think you've used the wrong word there as well.
Yeah, it's an intelligent animal, as we know. So you're happy with those?
No, that's insane.
All right, another dog one.
That's rich people shit, that is.
This was a 2006 invention. The dog chastity belt.
Well, it's not a chastity belt, is it?
No, it is.
No, it's not.
It's an adjustable harness that you put on your dog. The underside of the harness has a breathable mesh that sits flat against the dog's belly and its, private areas. The patent says it was really for female quadrupeds, but it could be used for males. And it's really for dogs that for whatever reason, you might not have been able to have spayed or neutered. So they're still randy fuckers, right?
Right.
So you give them
a little more sense.
Little chastity belt.
I was very dismissive of this, but you've kind of won me over, because if there's a medical reason that they can't have it done...
Hmm.
Then maybe you do need something to deter them. Why would you deter them, though?
Well, you might not want puppies on your hands, might you?
Quite literally. I was going to say, if it starts doing something you don't want it to do, you could just pull it off. But then...
What you do in your private life, Ben? I mean, no wonder your dog won't die. She's having the time of her life every time she comes near you. Sure, there's a law against that. Dear. Are you telling your dog you're a dog gynecologist? Is this what's going on?
Yes.
No, this is really, if your dog, let's say you took Maisie out for a walk.
Yeah.
Let's say she's probably past puppy bearing age.
She's past walking age. She just sits down and refuses to move anymore.
So she's not going to offer herself up to a young, virile male pup. But let's say you, let's go back in time.
What I have is a living ornament.
She's basically a rug, isn't she? That's what you've got. So, let's go back to a time where Maisie was still a virile young woman, and you've taken her out to the park. She's very excited by the sight of a male pup, and you've not had her done. She's not been spayed. Suddenly, you've not put a chastity belt on her. She's suddenly up the duff. You've got six pups you've got to deal with, mate, because she hadn't thought of putting a chastity belt on her.
Oh, I mean, you see, you think that's a bad thing. That's a cash cow to me. That's six puppies to sell. I mean,
right.
Like that. That's like £7,000 right there.
Yeah. But you wouldn't buy a paddling ball with the proceeds. Yeah. Outrageous. Right, just before we finish up this week, Ben.
Yeah.
I've been meaning to do this for a couple of weeks, but the truth is I forgot. So I suddenly remember today. So Johnny Guildford got in touch.
Oh, yeah.
He's by the way, John, don't forget at Trevor Ben Paddling Pool, just to make sure you get that in. He sent a little dilemma for you in your role as a postman.
Oh, fun.
So he wants to know what you would do if you received this envelope, right? So a letter was sent, and on the front, rather than an address, it just said, Miss Katrina Davis lives in a blue and green shed on a crossroads near a village 21 miles from Land's End, as featured on BBC Two's Simon Reeve Cornwall programme. Cornwall. Right?
I mean, I'm fairly much of the belief that so long as you put the postcode on an envelope, it'll pretty much get there. This sounds ambitious.
Well, the postman who got this put in the extra time and got it there.
That's incredible.
What would you do if you'd received that?
I must admit, and I'm not saying this to gloat or brag, but I do tend to go a little bit above and beyond. And I think the absolute curiosity would be too much for me. I would have to get that letter delivered.
I mean, it's a blue and green shed on a crossroads near a village 21 miles from Land's End. Now, if you were a postman in that area, you know 21 miles from Land's End would be, you'd have a fair idea of the village, wouldn't you? I'd imagine.
Just about. I mean, I imagine up that end of the country, it's pretty sparse with houses.
And a blue and green shed on a crossroads would probably be quite recognisable if you're a postman in the area, would it not? Would everyone, if you said to a colleague, I mean, what sort of area would a postman cover or a post office cover? Would something within a 21 mile area, would you talk to someone who would know that area? You'd say, do you know about the green and, you know, blue and green shed? And your mate would go, oh yeah, I know the blue and green shed. Everyone knows the blue and green shed.
Bear in mind, they go to these places every day of their life, but you know, yeah. 6 days a week. They should know it pretty well.
Yeah. So I think it'd be fairly easy to find that, wouldn't it?
I think so. But this is the thing with me. I could have a what we call a missort. So I could find, you know, a letter in my bundle of mail for number 2, and I'm at number 28.
Yeah.
And I'll think, sod that, I'll deliver it tomorrow. But if there's a bit of an air of mystery about the post,
yeah,
and a bit of a, you know, ooh, where's it supposed to be? Then I'll probably chase that up more than I would the missort.
Did you see the thing this week about a postcard that has finally been delivered? It was sent 32 years ago.
Was it sent via East Grinstead by any chance?
I don't know. The postcard was sent on August the 30th, 1989. It was sent by somebody who was studying at the University of Michigan. The person is still at the address, and it suddenly popped in their letterbox this week. 32 years it's taken. I mean, where has it been for 32 years?
I'll tell you where it's been. It's been in the bottom of a grey Royal Mail sack for years.
Well, who's checking these sacks, mate?
Nobody.
But
shambles.
What am I paying the stamp money for?
Surely that's
there to ensure that that people are checking these sorts of things.
Oh no, it's one of those incredible things that people. It's a system that people have so much faith in. But I can tell you, if they hear this, they'll probably sack me.
I was going to say, mate, you're not treading on very thin ice here. But go ahead.
I've long given up. It's a shit show. It's an absolute shambles. The fact any post gets anywhere is a mystery to me.
But surely, I can't quite get my head around that it's been sitting somewhere for 32 years. I mean, does that mean that somewhere in a depot, there's a bag, a sack that has just been sitting there for 32
yes.
years that nobody's
yes.
even touched, looked at? I mean, surely these areas are cleaned on a regular basis, or somebody tidies up. I mean, are there just stuff just left sitting there for 32 years and no one says, what is that over there? Is that anything important? It just sits there. No one takes any care.
I do love hearing the redundant optimism of the general public as to how this company works. It's incredible. Wow. Yeah, I'm amazed it got there at all. I mean, 32 years late is better than nothing.
There's a bit of me that if I got a bit of mail that taken 32 years to get to me, that'd be quite sort of interesting, wouldn't it, to receive it, to think, well, so much has happened in that time. I mean, the only thing is you wouldn't want it from someone now dead, because that would freak you out, wouldn't it, if you suddenly got a postcard from someone who, let's say, had died 25 years ago, and you suddenly got a postcard from me, you think, fucking hell, that's terrifying. Well, there we are. That's it for another Trev and Ben podcast. Just got one recommendation for you this week, Ben. It's another podcast.
Now, we really shouldn't recommend other podcasts.
Why not? People don't just listen to one podcast.
No, you're probably right. I suppose it's the nice thing to do, isn't it?
Who knows? Somewhere on another podcast, somebody's saying our recommendation this week is the Trev and Ben podcast. Not very, very unlikely.
Like, again,
let's say like the paddling pool podcast. They're probably recommending us this week. We've done a lot for sales of paddling pools this week. Not in your house, but we've done a lot for sales of paddling pool. I found this podcast only last night, by the way, when I couldn't sleep because of the heat. And I just thought, I need something to listen to. I started searching for something new, and I came across a podcast. It's called The Rest is History.
Okay.
It's hosted by historians Tom Holland and Dominic Sandbrook. And it's fascinating. They've got lots of different subjects. I've listened to one where they talk about the history of comedy, and also comedy kind of in history with Al Murray, the pub landlord. That's interesting. I heard another episode where they get Stephen Fry on. He talks about Greek mythology. There's another one on conspiracy theories, which I've heard. I was awake for a long time in the night. I've gone through a lot of these, but they're really, really interesting. So it's called The Rest is History. Well worth a listen.
Nice. I'll give that a go.
So that's it. Thanks very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us about anything, but just the phrase paddling pool is enough for this week. At Trev and Ben on Twitter. And we'll catch you again next week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, and take it easy.
Bye.